Okay, so that's the alternative, which I think we can build on as a way of understanding meaning, which is distinct from traditional representationalism. But I want to go back to representationalism now, just to try and get an understanding of the kind of effects it has and why it's worth leaving behind. So, by representationalism, as I said earlier, I mean this view that meaning is some sort of mapping of something in the mind with something outside the mind. You know, that the meaning of a symbol is based on conditions of truth or falsity. So, embodied meaning is really at odds with this representationalist or cognitive view of meaning. So, now I'm suggesting that there was a middle way kind of structure we could have here. But I suppose with absolutism and relativism, for example, we encounter relativism and absolutism quite regularly in our experience in the middle way. So middle ways kind of navigating between two sides that we encounter regularly. But in this case, I think we encounter a lot more of one side of the spectrum than the other. So representationalism is what is overwhelmingly what people in our society anyway tend to fall back on as the basis of their understanding of meaning. But there is another possibility on the other side, which is expressivism. So rather than saying what meaning really is all cognitive and that's all there is to it, which is what representationalists do, you could also say all there is to meaning is expressive, it's all about feelings, it's fundamentally irrational, it's subjective, and so on, yeah? And this cognitive stuff doesn't really count. Yeah. So, and I suppose the place where we would find that is extreme romanticism, really. So it's, you know, everything is a matter of the heart, and the... I mean, you can get sort of very informal traces of it, I think, in some romantic poets, say, for, you know, where Keats complains about philosophy clipping an angel's wings and things like this. You know, if you wanted to, you could obviously construct a expressivist philosophy. I don't think I've come across one. I've come across sort of hints of it, but I don't think I can't tell you here's an expressivist philosopher who is making the opposite mistake. So obviously representationalism is the magnet which dominates. And I guess that's overwhelmingly because of the dominance of the left hemisphere in our society, or indeed perhaps in human experience, in our culture anyway. So the middle way, one way of thinking about the middle way here would be between expressivism and representationalism. The overwhelming problem is that of representationalism. And analytic philosophy, which is the school of what I call the school of Anglo-American philosophy, which dominates most university philosophy departments in this country and in the US particularly, is entirely based on this cognitive view of meaning. But it's not at all limited in its effects to that. I think overwhelmingly scientists, for example, tend to assume this kind of framework of meaning. Unless perhaps they're neuroscientists who are working in the area of meaning more recently. I don't know about psychologists, actually. Maybe you could tell more about that, Julian, but maybe we could come back to that.
Yeah.
But also religion. So I think another aspect of this is that if you look, say, at the Judeo-Christian tradition, going back, overwhelmingly the set of assumptions about meaning are, they're not made explicit at all because they haven't got as far as a theory of meaning, but what they assume about meaning is representationalist. So if you think about a revelation from God, for example, in order to be a revelation from God, you've got to have a representationalist set of assumptions for that whole idea to make sense. Yeah, so God gives you this form, this set of words, which represent the truth which God has given you. Mm. How could they represent the truth if you haven't got a representationalist model implicit in that? So that truth is assumed to be out there. It may not be a truth you could check out using scientific investigation, but it's the truth that God has given you, which exists, is always taken to exist in some sense.
Could you, in rough brushstrokes, say that representational view of meaning is out there, and expressive view is in there?
Yeah. That would be worth way putting it.
So there's, you're saying that it's difficult to kind of find a philosophical approach which is expressivist in an extreme sense, and yet the analytical traditions in the West are heavily representationalist. What about, you know, your kind of continental philosophical approaches? I mean, how do they understand meaning?
There are some challenges to the representationalist view within continental philosophy. There's Merleau-Ponty, who's probably the main philosopher who really came up with this sort of embodied view before Lakoff. He doesn't develop it as far as Lakoff has, and Lakoff has linked it much more with scientific evidence. But Merleau-Ponty probably should be credited as sort of the grandfather of it. So yeah, there are stirrings in the continental tradition which are a bit different, but there's also a lot of other stuff in the continental tradition which I think just assumes representationalism. So it's complicated. And certainly postmodernism seems to me to be representationalist. But that's one reason why I kind of rather lost interest in continental philosophy is the amount of postmodernism that sort of dominates it. But anyway, I suppose I wouldn't write off continental philosophy because it's quite complicated and there's lots of stuff going on, so you can ever often turf out something new and interesting.
I guess where I struggle with the terminology is I've thought a bit about meaning and what meaning means to me at a kind of colloquial, in a colloquial way, sort of intuitive. In fact, I was talking to you about this last week, wasn't I? And I just kind of almost start from the basis of, well, how do we use these terms in everyday life? And you talk about, you know, did I mean to do that? And there's this sense of like intention or value underpinning that. And there's, what does this sign mean or this word mean, which is the kind of representationist kind of approach, I guess. I've kind of just lumped emotion together with things out there in the world, I suppose, in the sense that I kind of think, well, okay, something's either representing a state of affairs in the world at some level, more or less accurately, or it's representing an emotion that I experience. And I kind of use the word represent in both contexts. Is that an unhelpful way of thinking in terms of what you're saying?
Well, it just doesn't make a distinction that I'm making, that's all. Right. But that doesn't mean it might not be helpful if that distinction is not important. But I use the term express for that second sense instead, just because it's you know, you can talk about if there's a relationship between your feelings and something that symbolises those feelings, then that thing expresses those feelings for you, just like you write a line of poetry. That's an expression of your feelings. Okay, so I mean, there's a lot of stuff I could say here about religion and politics and so on, which will be in my book, but I won't go into that in great detail now. But I think representationalism can be traced in a lot of our traditions, put it that way. And one interesting example, I think, of the practical effects of that is the way we do ritual. And I've wondered for quite a long time quite why so many people seem to be so unimaginative about ritual, that it's very often very restricted by a belief in tradition and what tradition prescribes. So obviously my first experience of ritual, being brought up in a Baptist household, my father's a Baptist minister, is Baptist church services. They're always done the same way. You know, four hymns. Well, there's an opening hymn, there's a children's address, there's another hymn, there's prayers interspersed here and there. There may be communion if it's a communion service. Then the children go out, then there's another hymn, then there's a sermon, then there's another hymn and a closing prayer. And there's very little variation on that process. And if you don't happen to engage with it, well, tough.
And I quite like the idea that there's adult content in a Baptist. The children have to be shipped out. Sorry.
And then when I got in order the Triratna Buddhist movement, I did lots and lots of sevenfold pujas, specific type of ritual with a set progression using texts from the Bodhicharya Avatara. You do certain mantras at certain points, you go through it in the right order. I've often discussed with people, well, why don't we do something slightly more adventurous with ritual? And I say, yeah, but what we do, I mean, sometimes we have people bringing in drums, and sometimes we have people make extra offerings, or maybe they make a special offering or something like this. On the whole, pretty minor variations on the thing, which was seen as quite radical. And how this... it seems to me that what's basically going on there is representationalism. So what the way people are approaching that ritual is they're thinking, right, well, this ritual means this truth which is being communicated through that ritual. Mm-hmm. So whatever you do, that essential framework for the ritual has to continue, because that's connected with that message, with that thing out there, which the people out there have got to get fed into them by the ritual, regardless of the bodily states of the people who are participating in the ritual. So it doesn't really matter if they're nodding off, or if they're getting extremely frustrated and alienated, or anything of that kind. They're getting the same stuff given to them. Whereas I think if we really started with a sense of, could we quite possibly do rituals differently, if we started with a sense, whatever we do here, the point of this ritual is that it should be meaningful to the people involved, both cognitively and emotively. So it should make an impression on us, and we should be able to obviously ascribe it some cognitive significance.
Which is why just transporting rituals from other cultures is often so completely meaningless, because
indeed,
we just don't relate to them.
Yeah.
Or they're meaningful because you abstracted yourself from this culture and immersed yourself in that of Japan.
So
I was just cheering in the corner here.
my suggestion for a better way practically to do ritual was just start again each time. Have at least a quick consultation. What would be the best way to make this ritual meaningful for everybody? Okay, we'll do this and this, and maybe use as wide a variety of appeals to the senses and different kinds of materials as possible to make it both engaging, meaningful in every sense.
This is just a comment, really, of an experience of this ritual representation when you were talking about the rituals and how they were kind of meaningless. Hmm. And it reminded me of a particular moment when I was at the Jamyang Centre, where I kind of went, I'm in the wrong place. Which was, there's a thing in Buddhism where there's a wheel that you spin and you're supposed to build up something like goodwill. There's a special word for it, though.
Do you mean good karma or merit?
Merit. Hmm. That was it. So you turn the wheel, and I hadn't heard of this before at all. But the, for me, the idea of you just turn a wheel and you get merit is like Christians buying their sins off. You know, it's the same thing. Hmm. But this, but the a woman there basically had an app of a picture of a wheel, and you could spin the wheel, and she was like, "I'm building up merit," and I'm like, "That's when I went, I'm in the wrong place."
They've actually electrified some of the prayer wheels in some Tibetan monasteries now, so they just go around on their own.
So yeah, that emptiness.